I'd like to welcome everybody on behalf of the commission. Appreciate your time and your attendance. Some of you haven't seen in a couple of months. Glad to see everybody here. So, first item of business, roll call, please.
Commissioner Sinapa.
Excused.
Commissioner Geary.
Excused.
Commissioner Blackburn.
Excused.
Commissioner Taggart.
Present.
Commissioner Christopher.
Here.
And Supervisor Couch.
Excused. Okay, thank you. We need approval of summary proceedings for the April meeting.
I make a motion to approve the meetings from the April 20th.
I have a second.
And you have a second. So we have a motion, a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No. Thank you very much. Consent agenda? There are none. Public presentations. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons to address the commission on any matter not on this agenda, but under the jurisdiction of the commission. Commissioners may respond briefly to statements made or questions posed. They may ask a question for clarification, make a referral to staff for factual information, request staff to report back to the commission at a later meeting. Also, the commission may act to direct staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation. Speakers are limited to 2 minutes. And also, by the way, we have a pretty good sized group here today. Any electronic devices, please turn to off or mute. And if you guys need to talk, please take it out in the board, okay? Because it's a small group and the acoustics here aren't that great. So, start with the first table. Any comments or presentations? Nobody? Okay, go ahead.
Do I stand up?
Stand there, say your name and address.
So my name is Nicole Hay. This is my first commission meeting, so I don't really know how this works, but I am on the board of directors for Ventura County Animal Services and recently moved to Bakersfield about 2 years ago and just kind of, you know, hopped right onto Bakersfield Police Rescue and was just very astonished by the amount of animals that are on the streets. I carry leashes in my car and dog treats and always have water. It was completely shocking. I remember calling the rescue the first time I saw it and was like, am I supposed to put the dog in my car? Am I supposed to help save them? I was completely lost. I think it's insane that there's no ordinances out here. The fact that it's very simple to keep people, you know, according to the rules and getting them to follow the laws is it's a very simple thing that can be done out here in Bakersfield. I'm also a teacher out here. I teach fifth grade. About 4 of my 25 students are breeding dogs at home, and there's always discussions about it. Every single kid in my classroom has had a dog get hit by a car, for sure. My student actually came in this morning and told me about a story that her dog got out last night and got hit by a car. So it's constant. It's insane that it's like that out here, and it's very sad, and something can definitely be done about it. I know the time was started late, so I can stop.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So you're currently a teacher?
Yes.
What school do you teach at?
I teach at Horizon Elementary.
Horizon Elementary, okay. Yeah. Is that Bakersfield or is that Panama?
That's Bakersfield.
Bakersfield, okay. Fifth grade. Okay.
Yes.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to Bakersfield. Okay, no one else from table one? How about table two? Nobody? Okay. Table three, Danny's table. Danny, nothing? Susan? Okay. And then we've got two more on the end that we'll go. Okay, Susan.
Here's the troublemaker. Don't be cheating me on my time.
I'm starting. Ready, go.
Hey, knock it down in 1 minute, okay?
Sitting back.
One of the infamous parts of town, the East Bakersfield, where we also see lots and lots of dogs. And she's correct, it is really sad to see the increase in the problems that we've been seeing. And I know most shelters are absolutely full. And I know every day they got to come in and make a list. And I think that's tremendous. I think this county is really doing a disservice to the community and to our organizations I would implore everybody to start sending emails to the board supervisors or the city council, whatever district you live in, and kind of put your foot down. From my perspective, I think three top things that are important in this county: police, fire, animal welfare, and child services. Mm-hmm. All three things have people in common, and usually there's criminal activity in all three areas. So if we don't beef up our enforcement of the laws, and or give the organizations the ability to enforce what's already on the books, you know, we're not going to get anywhere. I mean, you know, you've heard it for months and months and months about backyard breeders. You know, and it's still going on. Right? We see it all the time on Facebook, you know, and there's a lot of us that call them out, you know, after their posts get removed. But my main thing is I really think people need to, I mean, it's great to come here. I mean, you know, I know some of the organizations are trying to do some stuff, but I think it's time to get a little more creative, and I think it's really time to get on the board of supervisors' butts, council's butts, and start pushing them to do something. I'm really disappointed that we never seem to have one of our supervisors here to represent and hear firsthand, you know, what's going on. So anyhow, that's my position, and I'm tired.
Table three, Gina, and her friend.
Someone went to the public speaker site to prepare something. My name is Shauna Rockwell. I work for Jamar Vineyards, which is out in Edison, and known as like breeding ground. I love my job, but I hate my job because every day.
Your zip code where you live is what?
I live in 1-2.
1-2, okay,
work
that's
what. 7.
That's
sorry.
Okay.
If I don't see a dog that's laying dead on the side of the highway, I generally find them roaming our yard. So just really quick, I just wrote something just to give you a glimpse of the last 2 years. And I'm an avid animal person, and through all these little rescue efforts, I've met many of these fine people in the room because they have helped me with so many dogs. I'm just here to urge everyone to do something drastic and quickly to neutralize our dog and cat overpopulation. In just over 2 years, I've personally rescued, with the help of some of these wonderful ladies in the audience and a few of my coworkers, at least 13 dogs on or near my work. I have placed paw booths for each and every one of these dogs, and never have I received one call from a worried owner. I've had them all scanned, and with the exception of one dog, just the last one, none have ever been chipped or fixed. I've secured another half dozen dogs and either had animal control out or taken them directly to the shelter. Just yesterday, three more showed up. Today, another one. So I now have four on my property. I think it might be important to note that five of these dogs so far have been German Shepherds, and the other four have probably been some form of a pit mix. I've spent my own money buying dog food and blankets for these dogs. I've spent my own money paying someone to transport them to a better place. I've become emotionally invested in each and every one of them. And every time another dog shows up, it breaks my heart again. It's almost unbearable. We have got to do a better job as a community to provide free and low-cost spay, neuters, and vaccination clinics, and a much better job promoting community awareness. Billboards, highway signs, traditional media, and social media. I realize we do have access to some of these free and low-cost clinics, but they fill up quickly, and it's often difficult to obtain an appointment. The low cost is often also difficult to schedule. I'm so sorry, I'm going over my time. I apologize. But it's truly not low cost if you have multiple dogs. I could go on and on and on, but it truly is an emotional strain. Not just myself. I talked to Sunday because she helped me with my last dog, and she has 10 dogs in her own personal care. And unfortunately, when our harvest starts again in a month or so, I will not have the time that I've been able to, when we're not in harvest, the USDA is not out at my office every day. So I have a little time to secure the dogs and find a home for them. And each one of these dogs, I failed to mention, have gone to Lancaster, San Diego, Las Vegas, Santa Ynez, down south with Rhodesian Ridgeback. So every single one of them that I take care of, none of them stay here. Yeah. It's my intention to get them out of here so that they can find a better place.
If you'd like a little more time next month, we'll get you on the agenda. I give you a little more time.
Yeah, I apologize for that.
And I corresponded and everything, so.
And I know I'm reaching to the choir, but.
Okay, good. And we appreciate you being here. Jan, your turn.
Thanks, I'm just going to ditto what she said 100 times. My name is Gina. My zip code is 93311. I'm going to start off with a positive note. I called Kern County Animal Control's Fruitvale, and they helped me rescue two beautiful dogs. One was Ivy. Just fast forward, she was full of red ants, jumped through barbed wire to get some food for me, got her to a rescue down south, but she was in the shelter for about a week. Anyways, long story short, she just gave birth to 14 puppies last week.
Wow.
Yeah, so she's a big German, she's a big guy, not German Shepherd, the one that carries a little beer here when they go in the snow.
St. Bernard's.
Puppies. There you go, St. Bernard. And then Mary Jane was a sweet dog that I workplace in Bakersfield, Casaloma, and Cottonwood. I go out there, and the dog was full of, I thought it was mange, and then she had, scabies, and she had a prolapsed uterus, and she was full of gangrene. So I want to thank the county for helping me with those two dogs. I'd like to start on a positive note.
Okay.
Myself and Cheryl are still hauling between 600 and 800 pounds of food 2 times a week. Okay, Yacinda is my new friend. She's a part of RAD. She does it too. She works full time and does that. I do have a book or just a little folder over there that I'm going to show you just the latest few dogs that we have seen. I don't see a change happening. I don't know what you guys do in the shelter. I mean, that's not disrespectful. I don't see it. I kind of have an idea. But then again, you don't know what I do. I don't just throw food out there. We send blankets, we send water, we send treats. We try to get eye drops in there. We vaccinate, we deworm, we do the best we can. We need help. So I'm just gonna leave that. And I am just waiting for one more thing. You know how it says illegal to dump your trash? I'm waiting for it to say illegal to dump your damn dog, not your damn dogs, illegal to dump your dogs, and fines will be implemented, and I'd love to catch them. Amen.
Thank you. Are you still connected with Kathy Cornell?
Yeah, she did a transport today, I think.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we're separate rescues, but we help each other.
I don't know if you're partnering or not.
We just help each other.
I got you.
Yeah, like the same thing.
Okay. Thank you for the comment. Michelle, or Danny, anything else?
Okay. I want to say something.
Oh, okay, come on up.
I didn't, but I guess I didn't.
Get your little.
Nicole inspired. the reason she inspired me is because Yesenia, 93313. So she inspired me because I am also from Ventura County, and when I got here, I never saw so many stray dogs in my life.
Yeah.
In Ventura, the red, but if you see a dog on the street, you know it's somebody's dog, and you know somebody's looking for the dog. Here, probably nobody's looking for a dog. And Bakersfield doesn't have the greatest rep in California as it is. And I think it can definitely be improved. There's great people here. Like, I don't want to move here. I'm like, what? Bakersfield. Okay, but there's a lot of great people here. And I think we can live up to, I don't know, expectations, better people. And this is a good place. You know, it really changed my mind about Bakersfield once I moved here. But there are a lot of things to fix here. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. And you're right. Okay, anybody else with any comments?
I guess I have one.
Okay. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the front. So this time we'll start with staff announcements or reports. Our director, please. Mr. Collins.
Good evening, everybody. Dave Collins, Director of Kern County Health Services. Just wanted to touch on a few highlights in the director's report. And just to put it in context, I've been working at the county in animal services in some capacity since 2005. I moved to Bakersfield in 1999 from New York. I, like these two ladies from Ventura County, never experienced anything like Bakersfield in Kern County. Just the amount of loose animals and uncontrolled. Intentional and accidental breeding that occurs. Just the shelters being overrun and perfectly adoptable, healthy animals being put down. I've never experienced anything like it. Now, I will point out, and this is not an excuse, but please keep in mind that the median household income in Ventura County is $90,000. The median household income in Kern County is $50,000. There's a direct link between poverty and irresponsible veterans. So that's why we work so hard to try and provide resources to the community to do what's right, to be responsible. We have, since December, and I only say since December because it's really in a lot of ways, you know, the county appropriated $350,000 this fiscal year. Fiscal year starts in June and ends in July. So fiscal year 21-22, they appropriated $350,000 to enable low-income residents to get their pets spayed and neutered. If you look in your director's report, I'm sorry I didn't bring it up, there's a recap on the spay and neuter funding, and if you look towards the end, we're gonna easily surpass $350,000 this fiscal year. We'll probably end up spending over $400,000 in spay and neuter. We're not having to beg people to do it. People want to do it. In my opinion, and I've been doing this for a long time, right now, we face a lack of resources, not a resistance to being responsible. So that's what I'm focused on, is trying to continue to bring resources to the community to do what's right. It's just not enough of the resources that exist right now. Again, just to recap, since December of 2021, which is when we had really had to shift gears for spay and neuter, because our spay and neuter funding, our spay and neuter program, it's been $250,000 a year basically since 2012, and we really started to see some fruits of that labor 2017, 18, 19, at the shelter. I can't speak on what at the entire community, 8,000 square miles, what was happening to a granular level, but I can tell you at the shelter, we began to stop seeing pregnant dogs and puppies in the facility. And that's the first sense that there's some effect that spay and neuter is having. There was some consistency for 6 years, and the pandemic hit, everybody closed their doors. Our spay and neuter program was almost non-existent. And we're seeing pregnant dogs and litters of puppies coming into the facility like we hadn't seen since like 2016. I hate to be doom and gloom, but that's what we're seeing. So right around December, we realized that the vouchers, which is a part of the spay and neuter program that was pretty viable since 2013, somebody would walk into the facility, they would plunk down their co-payment, or sometimes no co-payment, and they'd get a voucher that they can redeem at a local veterinarian to get their animal fixed. And we were producing 4,000 spay and neuter surgeries a year just on those vouchers. All the veterinarians leave the county. They close their doors. They restrict the services that they're performing. Not only that, some of them just said, we don't want to take your vouchers anymore. And so that our voucher program wasn't viable as of about October or November. So we had to really shift gears. So in December, we partnered with SNP Bus, and we started taking the money that the county gives us and really trying to, not even speaking about what other organizations are doing, the great work that Curtis Without doing, Curtis Without Litters is doing, the great work that the rescues in our community are doing to promote spay and neuter, but we ourselves, we just said, we gotta try and make up this gap. There was a gap between March of 2020 and now. There's just not enough spay and neuter happening and not enough vaccinations happening. We're seeing the results of that now. It was not Shangri-La in 2019, but we were progressing in the right direction, you know, and now we're trying to dig ourselves out of this hole. So since December of 2021, when we really started partnering hard with SNPBUS, the county's been able to provide for the spay and neuter of over 1,100 dogs, just dogs, not talking about cats, I'm just talking about dogs. If we talk about cats, it's probably about three times the. We've also been able to, at no cost, since December, give out over 1,700 parvo distemper vaccines because it's the problem that we're seeing. You know, not enough spay and neuter, not enough resources. When I say resources, it seems like a word that I throw around a lot. That's what I mean, is a resource for somebody to be able to, who can't afford it or can't find somebody to do it, to be able to do what's right by their animal. So those are the type of resources that we're trying to really hit hard on. That being said, I'll get off my high horse now, my high dog now, I'll get off the St. Bernard. We are, I don't know if any of you follow other animal shelters, but the Riverside County Animal Shelter, Riverside is another county, Riverside is somewhat comparable to Kern County, although the demographics are different and the median household income is a little bit higher than ours, but it's comparable. And their county shelter has just completely removed all adoption fees because they have too many animals and not enough homes, and they are struggling to find homes for those animals. And they're killing those animals, just like we are. Their community is struggling, their rescues are struggling. Sacramento's in the same position, Fresno's in the same position. Santa Barbara is in the same position. One of our RVTs, who took a job in Santa Barbara about 3 or 4 years ago, she's directing the agency now, and she's pulling her hair out just like I did. because they're in the same position. We're really trying to make up that gap. And I don't mean to frame the crisis, because it is a crisis that's happening in Kern County, as it's anything less than a crisis, but just be aware that this is a statewide and nationwide crisis. And there's a bunch of different reasons for it. It's not solely the pandemic. It's a lot of it has to do with the pandemic, but there's a shortage of licensed veterinarians to go around. There's a shortage of resources, especially for impoverished areas, to go around. And it's our intent to, regardless of what resources exist or don't, to continue to try and identify the greatest need and try to provide an answer or provide a resource to address those needs. I completely went off what I was talking about, but back to the matter at hand, we are starting to see, right around that same December time period, we started offering low-cost, low-income vaccination clinics at the county animal shelter twice a month, and then we made a revisit to off-site vaccination clinics at least one Saturday a month, and we're really starting to see more people show up at those clinics, which is a good thing. In April, we issued 338 parvo distemper vaccines and 186 rabies vaccinations. A lot of what we're able to do, we talk about resources, just to give you an idea, our agency receives funding from the county's general fund. The general fund is what your tax dollars go into to supply government services like police, fire, and trash and maintenance of the streets and stuff like that. The general fund. And agencies like mine that usually run at a net loss, almost our entire budget is the general fund. Other agencies get state funding or federal funding, like Department of Human Services and stuff like that. We're not one of those agencies, so we're entirely off of the general fund. But whatever the general fund gives us is offset by the revenue that we generate. And most of our revenue is generated through licensing. And not only that, but the licensing proceeds that we do receive, 10% of it goes towards providing spay and neuter, which we kind of touched on. The more licensing we receive, the more resources we get from the county. So yes, it's always a wonderful idea to write your supervisor, if you're a county resident, and say, animal welfare, animal control, even if you're in the city, write your city council, it's important.
Excuse me.
But at the end of the day, also please talk to your neighbors and convince them to license their pets, because only about 20% of pet owners in Kern County do that. So yeah, licensing is important. You know, we are overall seeing, and I've talked about this a number of times up here, we're, with our shelter particularly, we would almost always see, and I've been with the department, like I said, since 2005, we would almost always see a reduction in the amount of total animals coming into the facility when the weather got cold, right around October. And then we would see it start to pick up again in April, just again, because again, the weather gets warmer, the animals are more inclined to leave property a little bit further, and they're going to procreate a little bit more. But we didn't see that this year. Actually, the last 2 years, really, we saw a consistent intake through the cold months, which is baffling to me. You know, and a lot of times I will tell you that what we're seeing in the animal shelter is usually what you're seeing in the community. So if we're seeing a consistent flow of animals coming into the facility, it's probably similar to what is being seen in the community. Somebody had said, we don't know what you do, we do. We do know what you do. And we're in the trenches too, man. But the other thing to there's a lot of good, don't get me wrong, and I hate to be up here all doom and gloom, but one of the other problems that we're facing is that we're seeing a consistent intake of dogs and cats through the normal cold months, but we're also seeing a decreasing amount of people coming into the facility to adopt. So those two things combined are concerning, you know. But the bright side is that what we've been able to identify is that, you know, the highly adoptable pets in our facility are easy to move. You know, they're not going to stay long. People are going to come and adopt those animals. It's the larger blocky-headed type dogs. Even those blocky-headed type dogs that are super friendly and good with other dogs, you know, those are hard to move right now. But what we're noticing is that although what we're seeing in other facilities, like I just mentioned, Riverside, Santa Barbara, Fresno, Sacramento, same thing with less adoptions, consistent intake. What we have noticed here is that when we take shelter pets out into an off-site event somewhere in the community, people want them. So what we're trying to do is, in the shelter, we're just trying to adapt. You know, we're trying to identify trends and trying to respond to those trends to continue to produce live outcomes in the facility, even though it's a struggle sometimes. So, you know, our adoptions are lower than what they've been. You know, there's a number here that says 657 dogs and 285 puppies under the age of 5 months have been adopted year to date. That's considerably less than what it was in the last normal year, 2019. The only number that's not, the other number on there that's concerning is 285 puppies, and it's only May. So again, that's super concerning, but we don't give up. You know, we'll continue to try and develop resources and, you know, answers to those questions and solutions to those problems. We did have a couple of, as you can see, all of the events that I put on the adoption promotions, those are all offsite events, and we're going to continue to do those. If we're going to do events, most of the time it's going to be offsite, just because, like I said, for some reason we bring those same animals offsite in a different environment and people are willing to adopt them. We were at the Condors game in April. We brought out two dogs, one was a husky, and somebody adopted it right away. I got like 15 huskies in the shelter that nobody wants, but I bring them to a Conrad game and all of a sudden somebody wants them. Petco has been an awesome partner. You know, we had an event April 9th. We brought out four dogs, every one of them got adopted. We were at the Scottish Games. People get trashed at those things, man. People were interested in what we're doing, and they were adopting animals. And my staff keeps coming back to me and saying, it's kind of an inside kind of story, but like a lot of our staff that's in positions to to get animals out of the facility alive, and they're beginning to manage programs. They have started out as an animal care worker, and they're learning the larger story of animal welfare in Kern County, and they're coming back to me and they're saying, most people don't even know who we are. And I'm like, yeah, because there's 900,000 people in this county, and the people that we usually insulate ourselves with aren't indicative of the entire county. And a lot of people don't understand that there's county and city, and that there's an animal control agency, and that there's resources that are available. They're starting to see that, and I will preach to them, when you're out at an event, when you're talking to somebody, talk to them like they have no idea who we are, because often they don't. I don't know where I was going with that, but we did have a really cool event in April. The Petco Love Foundation reached out to us, and they sent us a children's book that they, Kristen Chenoweth had written. She's an actress, an actor, and they sent us free copies of the book and some t-shirts, and we just kind of put it together last second. I talked about it last month. And I wasn't sure that anybody was going to show up, because we were asking children to come into the facility, either bring their own books or take one of these books. We'll give you a t-shirt, just read to the shelter animals. And we had 22 kids that showed up. And there's some pictures in there that I think are adorable. And they're, you know, that event, we've done similar events like it before, and that it's not just a photo opportunity. The reason why we do that stuff is because, you know, there's still a notion out there that animal shelters are a terrible place to be. You know, horrendous things happen there. If you adopt a shelter pet, there's something wrong with those pets. You know, they're only aggressive animals. There's still that notion out there. So we want to always try to promote programs that bring, especially kids, into the facility for a positive experience, so that when they do grow up, that might be the next people that are taking the baton from us, you know, and having a different perception of what an animal shelter is. So that reading event, in my opinion, was super successful. The kids loved it. Our field services calls, still consistent. I think Susan had mentioned that there's a notoriously high frequency of loose animals in the northeast area of Bakersfield. Well, the call volume plays itself out there. The highest number of calls our officers responded to was in the northeast, 311 calls just in the month of April. Officers were able to return 17 dogs to their owners in the field. 65 dogs were secured back on property by animal control officers. We do make every effort to not impound a dog. I mean, if we can do somehow make sure that we keep that animal with their owner, we would always prefer to do that. Not always, but most of the time I prefer to do that. Shameless plug on page 9, pet licensing with dog consent. If you're a county resident, please license your pet. We've made it super easy. Go to our website, the link right on the homepage. Click on that, and there's a new service called DocuPet that makes licensing your animal super easy. Not only that, but you can personalize your dog license now. It doesn't have to be the old school fire hydrant or dog bone or whatever we were using at the time. You can personalize it whatever you want. To license your pet. I did want to touch on the spay and neuter as well. Actually, our volunteer program has achieved its highest amount of hours of service donated since we opened our volunteer program again in December, 511 hours. 52 new volunteers came on board. We had 91 active in the month of April. We did have a spay and neuter clinic April 7th and 8th in Button Willow. Actually, that was at somebody's recommendation at one of the meetings here. It was not as successful as I would like it to be. And we did all that we could to promote it in advance. I mean, there's still 83 spay and neuter surgeries that happened amongst 2 days, but we had the capacity to do about 120. But still 83 surgeries, 83 animals that can't produce offspring in Button Willow and Lost Hills, which is good. We do have an upcoming spay and neuter clinic May 24th in Taft. It's booked. It's been booked since 2 days after we started taking calls. We have another one 3 days after that in Lake Isabella. That's also booked. It was booked the same day we started taking calls. And then we're preparing for two spay and neuter clinics in Hatchby, June 2nd and 3rd. We haven't begun taking sign-ups for that just yet. But like I said, I did want to touch on the spay and neuter funding, which is the last two pages there. We had never spent, I think, over $75,000 on feral cats prior to this year. This year, we're going to end up spending over $160,000 just on cats of the spay and neuter dollars. You'll see that as of the end of April, $130,000 was used for the SNPLUS folks and a few other mobile coaches, but mostly SNPLUS. That's at over 1,100 spay neuters since December. That's what I was talking about. Like I said, we were appropriated $350,000 for spay neuter. Right now, we've spent $346,011. So like I said, we've already surpassed that by now, because this is as of April 30th. But we have a trust fund, which is a result of the 10% of your licensing proceeds come to a trust fund to support spay and neuter, and that's important because that's going to allow us to continue to offer spay and neuter services through the end of the fiscal year, which is June 30th. And that actually concludes the director's report. The only other thing I do want to throw out there is that most of you have my contact information. If you do not, please come and see me after this meeting. I mean, you should have it anyway, but the state of California has a grant program called California for All Animals. This is a long time coming. The state of California had come out with a statewide goal. It was never a law or a mandate, but it was a goal. And the goal was that no adoptable animal should be euthanized. That was about 20 years ago. But the problem was that there was never really any funding put behind it. There wasn't any legislation to make that happen. So the governor, about 3 years ago, just before the pandemic, they voted to appropriate first it was $5 million and then added another 50. So it was a total of $55 million in state taxes to provide grant funding to support that idea of no adoptable animals being euthanized. So here we are almost 4 years later, and the result of all that is a grant program run by this UC Davis, actually. And it's called California for All Animals. And the reason why I'm taking so long to get to this is I want to ask each and every one of you, and I mean this genuinely, to give me some ideas on how you think, what kind of grant we need, okay? And they're relatively specific. And some of you may be applying for that grant yourself, by the way, but that shouldn't prevent you from giving me thoughts. But the basic idea of the grant is they want ideas and thoughts, a maximum of $200,000 in funding, minimum of $25,000 in funding, and it's one of several things, basically. Either preventing animals from coming into an animal shelter, keeping animals with owners, or increasing the potential for them to leave the shelter alive. Spay and neuter, I believe, can be a part of that too. But that's just me. I have my own thoughts and my own ideas about what type of resources the grant funding should be used for. It's a lot of money, $200,000. But I want to hear from all of you. I have to submit this grant by June 30th. I'd rather get it in sooner than later. I've asked the same thing to every one of my staff, most of my volunteers, because I have my own thoughts and opinions, but they're not always right, and my significant other will tell you that. So if you have ideas and thoughts about some resources that grant funding can provide for 1 year, it's usually for one fiscal year, I'll come and get me. I'll give you my business card, shoot me an email. As things come up, as you have thoughts, as you have ideas, send them to me. I need things that I'm maybe not thinking about. But I do have to have that grant submitted by June, and I want as many perspectives as I can get. That actually concludes the director's report. I can answer your questions.
Okay. I'm open for questions from the table. Anything?
I don't have any specific questions. I like the idea of the grant. I have a couple of ideas based on just what you told us here tonight.
And just one other thing. We can't use grant funding for people. So I've had to say that to my staff. You can't just say, well, we need 10 staff members. No, it doesn't work that way because it's one-time funding, and people are not one-time funding, that's sustained funding.
Well, what I was going to say is when you were talking about how you do so well with your off-site events, and I know a lot of the reason is people don't like to go into the shelters because it seems like it's doggy and cat death row. And I proved that when I had my store, Books and Crannies, and I started adopting cats out of there. And it was, I was adopting 25, 30 kittens a month back in my heyday. And people liked it because it was an experience that was joyous to them. It didn't feel like, you know, oh my God, these cats are going to be dead tomorrow. I mean, they were genuinely happy. It was a fun, exciting place. So that would be my suggestion for the grant money, is figure out how to support more off-site events to get those hard-to-adopt dogs adopted. And I know I have a heart, whenever we have large dogs up for adoption, they go really quickly. And especially out of the shelters, because they don't behave well when they're behind bars. Mm-hmm. And when they're there 24 hours a day, they do not behave well. And there's nothing worse than a 150-pound dog or a 100-pound dog not behaving well. So I support that 100%, and I think that's what you should do your grant making.
Thank you, I just like to second that. I think it's that's kind of a great idea.
Yeah, I like the idea of being innovative. Is this your first time at the Scottish Games? I don't think you've mentioned that before in the past.
We've been out there in the past.
Yeah. Have you? Okay. Last month you mentioned that you hired a vet that thought she was going to retire, and that went through, right? Everything's good.
Yeah.
She's still cranking up the.
He stays questionable whether she's going to show up for work, but yeah.
Is she cranking up the surgeries?
It's a whole medical team. She's got her hands full.
Is she okay?
Yeah, she does a lot. She's trying to.
Okay, good.
It's breaking up.
One thing I noticed on the.
I do plan to have her at one of these meetings.
I'd like to meet her, yeah. Mm-hmm. What was her name again?
Dr. Nicole Heller.
We appreciate her.
So, okay. Yeah,
well, we're grateful that she unretired. So that's good.
We'll throw roses down.
Just bring your tissues.
One thing I noticed on your intakes, first 4 months this year versus first 4 months last year, the intake was up 954, which just plays havoc with all your numbers.
Yeah, so if you round it up to 1,000, that's 200 more animals a month.
Yeah, I know. 250 of those 4 months, so yeah. So it just plays havoc with your save rates and everything else, but the intakes are really where it starts. So,
but the fascinating thing about that, fascinating, I mean, kind of facetious,
interesting,
is that we're still not near our intake for 2019.
Is that right?
We were taking in considerably more animals in 2019 than we are right now.
Okay.
But there's just less foot traffic in our facility.
You haven't mentioned the PEAT program in a while. That's still going, right?
No.
It's not? Okay. I wonder how I heard you talk about it. Okay, because I remember seeing around the neighborhood, you know, trying to get people to please, you know, license your dogs, but okay. That's all the questions I had. I'll open up questions for the first front table.
So mine was kind of like more of like a warning. Okay. So I was invited into a city planning meeting this last month, and I'll be attending every single month that I can. And they're talking about what the city's plan is for, and it's going to affect everybody, okay? They want to build tiny houses on tiny lots in every freaking place that they can possibly
That's the trend these days.
Yes. Oh, thank you, Governor Newsom, for that. That's going to bring in a lot more people and a lot more animals and a lot more need, and we have the same little shelters that have been there since, 1970 or whatever, that is not going to be able to take on the additional animals that this is going to bring on. So I actually went in to kind of talk about, you know, like, hey, our shelters need, you know, more land, they need bigger buildings, they need, you know, they need more resources. But I did not know that was going to be the deal until I ended up in that meeting. So, you know, I feel that we were behind the curve already in 2019, and by closing the doors, it just festered everything. And so now we're kind of starting to see the truth, what was out there waiting for us. Now that we're kind of back functioning the way that we can, maybe the same, you know, I feel like we have more spay and neuter services than we had before. We were doing all of our stuff with critters you know, in 2019, and now we just had all of this stuff fester, and it's all here now, and so now we're pulling in the mobile clinics and trying to do as much as we can, and we're not able to even catch up. So, I mean, for me, it worries me as like a rescue and doing the little bit that I can, and hearing from my fellow rescue, you know, advocates of crying and going, what am I doing? I feel like, I mean, Dawn Romero, she was telling me that they've, 1,200 animals so far this year that they transported out here, and she's like, there's no ending to it. And she focuses on pulling out of the shelter the best that she can, and also with the community of pregnant dogs and puppies. That's what they focus on, pregnant dogs and puppies. Get them out of here, get them out of here. And she just, there's no end to it. So I just kind of feel like, you know, the whole thing, because you mentioned the income differences and that kind of stuff, I feel like that ceiling is being shattered here. We have a lot of movement in the state of California in general. People are coming in here, they're making money, they're doing all this stuff, but they need to be, I think that we need to set an example. Even though the other shelters are, you know, they're struggling as well, we have to set that example, you know, and be able to say, okay, listen, you're gonna come in here with all these animals, you know, whatever, kitty cats and that kind of stuff in tow, they need to be spayed and neutered, they need to be vaccinated, and they need to be licensed. And hopefully that grant money can be kind of, you know, maybe even used for some enforcement, not necessarily for people in general, but materials that we need and that I know that my crew, which is sitting here with me, would love to go out and help out in the field more and spread the word and help with licensing and, you know, and that kind of stuff too. But we have to set that example.
Yeah, I like that idea of new streams of income, because you really do. That way you can be innovative and do new programs like Nick is talking about. Anybody else have a question on table one? Okay.
I have a question.
You almost missed it.
No, not me. This, I feel like this question might be beneficial to the group, but I just kind of wanted to see, I don't know, if there is a certain way that our animal control officers work, if they all patrol a certain area, if they all just go based off calls, and you also said you said earlier that you try to avoid them bringing the dogs into the shelter. But just like what I personally do myself, is I kind of patrol a neighborhood like an animal control officer. And I just use this as an example. Like between Bernard and Columbus and Altavista and River Boulevard, I get off the freeway. By the way, I live on the northeast up by Panorama and 93305. It's county where I live. I know that area is county too. But I drive through there because there's so many dogs out on the streets, you know. But I know a lot of those dogs are people's dogs that they just let run around, you know. Mm-hmm. So when I see a dog the first time and it doesn't look horrible, I leave it alone, you know. And throughout like my drives, I'll just kind of look out for it and see if it leaves the area, see if it's a stray. But and many times I do, I stop and I follow it, and I end up following it home. But my question is, are animal control officers, are they like set to monitor a certain area, or how does their job really work? Like, I don't wanna, I do my best to avoid even calling, but if I do wanna say, hey, I know this person lets this dog run out of their yard every single day, how does that work? You know, I don't know if that sounds right.
So I think you have two questions. The first question is how they're assigned work.
Yes.
They are assigned a jurisdictional area. It's like if you have any law enforcement friends, law enforcement is assigned to an area. Same thing with our animal control officers. So you may be assigned to Northeast Bakersfield, and there are some boundaries for that. And then as calls come in, they're entered into a system and they're sent to the officer who works that area to their computer in their truck. And then they respond to that call. So they spend 100% of their time on complaint-driven calls. So they don't patrol an area because they have nothing else to do. There's the call volume is such that that's all they're doing is responding to calls. And then you had another question there on the end.
It was, I'm so like, if we know a dog, a certain dog.
Yeah, that's what we call an owner loose. So yes, if you know a particular address, know that the dog is loose or are seeing it loose right now, you pick up the phone during normal business hours, call 868-7100, talk to dispatch, let them know that the brown pity male with the black collar is loose at 123 Main Street and he's loose right now. And they may ask you some questions like, is he aggressive, is he injured, or something like that. And if he's not, and they'll enter a call for a response to that property. it's an infraction having your animal off the property the first time. It's an infraction for the most part. So an officer has to witness it. So when you call, by the time my officer gets there, if the animal's off property, they can impound the animal, or they can issue some sort of correction or a citation and then give the animal back. If their neighbor's not home, they have the same options. They can secure the animal back on property, just a gate that's open or something like that. Or they can impound the animal and leave a notice. So on those calls where you know the animal belongs to a particular address, yes, you can call and let us know the particular address and the description of the animal.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So
your director's report was great. You guys are doing a lot of good things at the shelter. But the thing that's missing is like the education in the community. I mean, like I was saying earlier, I'm a teacher and I was getting one of the dogs fixed this week and I stopped my class because there was a mix-up and I'm texting on my phone telling them, give me a second. They didn't even know that a dog needed to be spayed. These are fifth graders. Like, yeah. That was shocking to me. I had to explain that to them. So the education isn't starting. I'm just wondering, like, we've got these programs, you know, with the reading, and we've got the off-site stuff that's happening, but, like, we can keep fixing the dogs for the next 100 years, and if no one cares about it, if everybody just thinks, oh, it's fun to have pregnant dogs, and yeah. it's fun to have to spay and neuter them, and we're gonna find the money to do it, and it seems like you're juggling 1,000 things, but, like, the real problem is there's no education. People think it's fine to have pregnant animals. They don't care if their dog is out of here pregnant. Breeders don't. They just think, oh, I need money. I need to figure out how to feed my family, so I'm just going to keep breeding these animals. There's no education. Is there any plans to educate this community on how important it is to stop treating these animals this way and stop thinking that this is okay?
So to answer your question, there's no plan to do that, but we do it as often as it's allowed to us. My ask of you, you did say you're a teacher. Have the conversation with the powers that be in your school. Give me as much time as you can, and I'll have people there to talk about responsible pet ownership. What we have found very recently is that the schools in California are held to a high standard to meet certain criteria, and they're not afforded time to build pet education and pet awareness into that training.
So would that be something you guys would be open to?
Absolutely.
Because like even the school I work at, they had a dairy cow come a couple months ago, and they learned how to milk a cow, and that was just the most ridiculous.
I will give you my information afterwards. You clear with your school, and we'll have people there as often as you want.
Thank you.
So we'll talk about it.
Thank you.
Okay, tip two. Any questions?
You still use the vet bus that we got years ago?
Yes,
the glass front on and stuff.
Do we use it? Yeah, it's got a lot of materials stored in it. But no, it doesn't go anywhere because there's no vents to work on.
Okay, well, I didn't know if you'd used it for the stay clinics that you have occasionally because it was pretty well equipped back then, as I recall.
So if you think about it, like we pay the SNP bus people, depending on the size of the clinic, $7,000 to do about 60 surgeries. It comes out to about $120 per surgery. And all we do is pay them and then tell them where to be and then we help make the appointments. There is no way that we could do it for cheaper than that with the 2005 spay-neuter coach that we have. Not only do we not have the people to be on that coach, but that is like a 14-hour day most of the time. If you think about it, you gotta prepare, you gotta drive the thing out there, especially if it's in a remote area, and you have to have staff to accept the animals, recover the animals, and surgery the animals. It's a resource-intensive process, and we do not have the resources to do that. That's why I'm actually very, very grateful for the SNP bus to at least make their services available.
You used to use it even as on off-sites because it was a really good way to put like cats that could escape in, because you had that front on it, so I didn't know if it was being utilized at all.
Yeah, it was actually intended as an adoption vehicle initially, but it's huge.
Yeah.
And it takes a bit to
$5 a mile.
Drive it places, especially at $6 a gallon. and the type of adoption promos offsite we're doing are, you know, 3 or 4 dogs at most. We try to keep it small so we're not overloading people. And that coach is probably overkill for that.
Yeah. You know, we still around and then
no, we still have it.
And you used to have, Sally came up with a project where you had that little, like a van type thing that she transported animals all over the West Coast to take them other places to be adopted.
Yeah, we, that was many years ago. Yeah, we had a transport program and a transport vehicle that we were on the public health at the time. The public health purchased us a 25-year-old transport vehicle, but it worked. But that was, you know, 10 years ago, and now it's tough to find transport partners. Tough to find transport partners that can accept them in California. So we did use some of the coronavirus relief funding that the federal government gave to each state to purchase two transport vehicles. And we purchased them in June of 2021. And because vehicles are very, very far behind in being produced, there's no end in sight as to when we're going to receive those two transport vehicles.
I just was thinking about the other day when I was there, because I haven't seen them or anything, and I thought, you know, at that time they were a really good resource, but I've been around long enough to know that things change.
Yeah, and actually that coach was originally, that was probably boring, but we purchased that coach initially because the vet that we had at the time had no place else to perform surgeries in. There was no surgery suite. Well, now at this facility, we actually have surgery room when that stuff gets common.
Fine.
Anybody else on table two?
Yeah, mechanical question, I guess. I've talked to a couple people, I've heard from a couple people over the past month or so that work at a couple different rescues up in Tehachapi. And they, you know, they said, oh yeah, we have scanners, you know, in different conversations that came up. And, you know, microchip scanners. And I said, well, that's great for the, you know, dogs, cats you get. And they said, oh yeah, and also for the ACOs, because if theirs isn't working or they don't have one, they bring them in and we scan them for the ACOs. Which really surprised me, because don't the ACOs have working scanners generally in their vehicles?
Yes, they do.
Oh, okay, well, I might want to check on that.
Oh, they all have scanners. I don't know who that was or what.
I don't know either.
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know if it's they're saying
okay.
It's happening every
day. Next time
I
get something, I'll get more particulars about when and who and which one.
And it also depends. There's sometimes when our officers might respond after hours and they'll stop by a vet's office to get an animal scan because maybe they don't have their scanner on them. But by and large, yes, they're
maybe
always.
Yeah, that happened. Okay. All right. That's just a question.
That attached
me
death?
No, two people that it just came up twice in two different conversations, which I thought was interesting. And they both are part of two different rescues that work up there. And so I was like, you know, second time I heard that from somebody else. I wonder if this is a real problem, which is why I thought I would bring it up with you.
Anybody else on table two? No? Table three.
I have a comment.
Okay, Michelle, go ahead.
Nick, you used the words doom and gloom earlier, and I know, I don't know how a lot of people might feel this way. I know I do. That I really, over the course of the years that I've been coming to these meetings, I really appreciated how much more realistic you're speaking on the things that happen. I'm not saying you never did, but I'm saying it's a lot more forward now, and I feel like it really does validate what anyone would be experiencing out there. Not that anyone's ignorant to what you really do or that you have a hard job or that you care, because I know deep down we all know that. But it's a completely separate thing, and I remember coming to these meetings and just hearing positive talk mostly, and it just was very defeating when what we would say was something completely different, and hearing you speak like that, I personally don't consider it doomy and gloomy. I feel like it's very realistic. And when you have real information, hearing it from the director's mouth gives you something when you go out there and you're not just speaking like some crazy animal advocate. Like, this is actually, like, come to this meeting and hear how it is in the shelter from the director, not just us talking, you know, negative stuff. Like, I really appreciate it. And it has changed over the course of the years. And I do. I just want you to know, if you wouldn't have said those words, I probably wouldn't have even thought that. But, like, I know that's not, you're not like that. You don't want to be super doomy and gloomy. And I know it's not your favorite thing to discuss, but I really do appreciate it. Just want you to know.
We do too, because he takes all questions. I mean, not many people probably does quite.
Like you, you appreciate the dean doing
real estate.
We don't want to do a
We're all in this together.
The truth is, you can come to me and you can ask me for what's really happening in animal welfare. I'll give you my perspective. It's not always going to be peachy keen, but I'm always going to tell you there's good things happening. It's not all atrocious.
No, I know.
There are good things happening. There are people out there in the community, like everybody in this room, that cares, that wants to see change. You know, my staff deals with the same thing, in that you got to consider, especially my friend office staff, who are the face of the organization. Okay, two of them have been doing it since our volunteer work there. Long time. And so a lot of times if somebody comes into our facility, they're looking to get rid of their animal. Or they're in crisis. And they're not being as cordial as maybe you or I might. So they're dealing with people in crisis. And we sometimes slide down that slippery slope of assuming that the next person that walks in that door is also highly irresponsible. And they begin to lose sight of the potential that if I can help this person, maybe they'll provide a better house, a better life for their pet. And so when you talk to me, and it seems like I'm trying to tell you the good things, it's because there are good things happening. There are people that care. There's way more people that care about their animals than don't. But that doesn't mean that there's not bad people out there. There are. And I think there's way more people that would provide better care for their animals if they had the resources to do so. And, you know, I was talking to somebody about this today that, you know, when I first moved to Bakersfield, I lived on Bell Avenue in Oildale. And, my kids had a normal life, and my significant other and I, we struggled to pay the bills. You know, before I worked for Animal Control, so I worked three jobs, which was a pizza, and I was a telemarketer, and I was doing everything I could to pay the bills. But my kids wanted dogs. The need or the desire to own an animal goes across all perspectives, right? You're poor or you're rich, everybody wants to own an animal. There's an intrinsic benefit to owning an animal. I can't change that. None of us can. People are going to own animals. So when I was raising kids, we got two dogs. I did not have the resources to care for two dogs. And I struggled to keep them on property, to be honest with you. I fed them and I cared for them, but I didn't get them spayed and neutered. I didn't get them vaccinated. I didn't even know where those resources were because those animals were lower on my priority. And I think that if somebody would have approached me almost 20 years ago, and said, hey, I have this resource that I can provide to you that'll help you keep your animal longer, I would have taken advantage of it. I'm not saying everybody's like me, but I think if that's me, that there's other people like that out there. And that's what I mean by trying to provide resources. And part of this grant is to try to think of ways that we can address the majority of the people who might do better by their animal if they have the resources to do it. Do you know how frequently we get calls from people that are moving and don't know what to do? They can't find pet-friendly housing. Or their animal is sick because they didn't get vaccinated, or their animal is injured because they couldn't keep it on property and it got hit, or it got pregnant because they couldn't keep it on. These aren't people that are out there to do bad. They just didn't have the knowledge, didn't have the education, and didn't have the resources to do what's right. And I'm telling you, like, my experience in this past 20 years in this field, there are way more of those people then there are people that have, you know, really bad motives. And, you know, it's my task, it's this department's task, to try and find resources that can hopefully lift up those animal owners to provide them a way to care for their pets better. Sorry.
No, and you know what, you're absolutely right, because even in, like, working at the vet, you know, it's expensive. The vet care is expensive. A lot of people don't have the resources, especially right now after everything that's going on and everything everybody's been through. And it's hard because, you know, even like with my little guy, right now we're treating him for cancer. He's on chemotherapy. And it's taking everything I have. And every one of you that thinks it doesn't make a difference on every single solitary pet that you help, it does. It more than you can imagine. You know, again, I'm looking at, sorry, probably not having my little guy much longer. And I'll tell you, it matters. Every single one of you matter.
You know, there's this weird, I don't even know where we're going with this meeting, but there's this weird, weird dichotomy between this county and other counties just like it. We're poor. This county is poor. 20% poverty in this county. But if you go to other areas that are not impoverished, there's way more spay-neuter resources. Way more animal rescues saving animals. Way more resources for, and the people don't need it. People in this community, there's one high-volume spay-neuter clinic here. One. How long have we been trying to hit this spay-neuter drum? And there's nobody willing to come to this county and develop some resources.
But you have to look at the bright side too, Nick. 15 years ago when we started this, there was nothing. That critters with litters, without litters wasn't here. So you gotta kind of think, yeah, we're still behind, but we're moving that way. Because when we started this, before you guys, some of you probably weren't born, I think.
Back in the time of the Green Gate.
Yeah, back when the Green Gate. Mm-hmm. You guys don't know about that. We have made progress. And you do a lot of hard work. You don't just go in and draw a paycheck. So, you know, you've got to keep looking at the bright side too, so you don't go down that dark path.
I'm going to tell you, I've enjoyed the comments, and I've enjoyed the comments from the director, because you're not going to get a guy.
He never takes any of the very approachable. Something about Nick.
This passion about stuff, you're just not going to get it. So,
yeah. Yay, Nick.
Okay, questions on, okay, Susan, please.
I just want to kind of reiterate, I also agree that education is extremely important, especially in certain communities where there's a certain mindset that it's okay to treat your animals a certain way. And the prime example is the woman who was kicking her little Yorkie. You know, and her husband said, well, she's disciplining the dog. Well, obviously, you know, wherever they grew up or whatever, this was acceptable. So that's something that education says that's not acceptable here. You know, that's abuse. You know, you need to learn about it. So I think some of it you're fighting also is the mindset of people in the community. You know, and I think education is a lot the key also.
Yeah. Any other questions on table three? I guess we're at Danny. Gina, anybody? Anything? Any questions? Okay.
Well, I just have a comment, or I guess a question, I don't know. I actually had my first-hand experience with fostering a whole litter of kittens this last month, and my whole intention was to be able to take them to the vet, get their first vaccine, and, you know, give these new, whoever I was able to adopt them out to, resources so they could go to Critters Without Litters or let them know about the spay and neuter clinic. But speaking of lack of resources, they quoted me at my vet, I go to the vet every single month for my dog that has an autoimmune disorder, I spend $150 on him a month. And I was quoted like $350 to take these four kittens that I just happened to stumble upon in our backyard, and I just didn't have the funds available so I could take them in. So I feel like I failed in a sense because I gave these kittens away, you know, and not to just anybody. They were close family and friends, so I know that they know the importance of spaying and neutering. But I know I'm not necessarily the average person that is going to have kittens in their backyard and like, oh, I found free kitten, you know, kittens. You're going and take them, and then it just continues the whole cycle. So I mean, I did what I could, and I got a couple donations from people to help me. But, I mean, I was in the hole, like, $300 just on rescuing, you know, kittens that just ended up in my backyard, so.
If that happens again, you can, most of that, assuming you're a county resident, you can come to us, and we'll provide the resources for you to care for the veterinary resources in addition to materials that you might have.
And I know, and I knew that was the option. It's just I work a job that's 9 to 6 sometimes, so to actually have the time to go down there or even have somebody as a volunteer to go for me and say, hey, I need to register. I knew that was an option, but I just, myself, with my schedule, just did not have it.
Okay. These are all questions, so I'll bring it back to the front. I did want to repeat myself a little bit. I appreciate Director Collins' comments a lot. His passion he gives. He fields every question. I also appreciate Commissioner Taggart's reminder that, yes, everything you do does add up. It all makes a difference. Maybe in the middle of it, you don't think you're making a difference, but you really are making a difference. And you look back a year from now and you say, oh, yeah, we did make a difference. But when you're in the middle of it, sometimes it's hard to see. Okay. I need to get a motion to receive the file.
That,
okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you very much. Commissioners, announcements or reports?
May 21st, Critters Without Litters, I'm sorry, April 21st, Critters Without Litters did a big spay day. I don't know if it was a national on your calendar spay day, because Nick had a spay day at the shelter as well. But it was a cat-only clinic that they offered on that particular day. They were hoping to get 120 cats in on that day, and I think they ended up with 80, 90, something like that, so it was a little shy of what they were hoping for. However, I think it was really a really good thing, and I think with a little bit more publicity. Vicki is also, not sure if I'm supposed to share this, but is going to allow some people that she calls super trappers, the people that are doing the trapping on a regular basis, the ability to bring a few more in cats on certain days. I think she's going to be doing this one day a month, and they're hoping to attract 100 felines. The next one is the 26th of May. They're hoping to have 100 cats in on that day. I don't believe that they are doing dogs on that day at all. She has granted me 16, that I can bring in 16 cats on one day. That to me is huge, because the fact that I can pile them all up in the back of a pickup truck with a camper shell and haul them all down there in one sitting and then go back the next day and go get them, that is huge, rather than two by two by two by two. This could take a long time. So this is 8 weeks worth of two cats per week that we can get done in one day. So far I have 14 to my credit, 11 of which were female. So I think I've prevented somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 kittens in the next 6 weeks. So I'm pretty proud of that. I am enjoying it. It is a non-committal kind of thing. It's not interrupting my home life. I don't have kittens in my bedroom for the first time since 2007. I do not have kittens in my bedroom. This is unheard of. I'm the person that had 22 kittens under the age of 8 weeks in my bedroom at any given time. So this is big for me. I am making a shift from the rescue to CNR. And it's a hard shift for me to make because I've been doing rescue for so long, but it's important. So rather than focusing on the aftermath, the doom and gloom, prevention.
Yeah.
And it's working. I wish there was a dog clinic. You could just go scoop up a bunch of neighborhood dogs and drop them off.
That would be fun.
Yes.
I do.
Yeah,
we
just
need
to
do it all
the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try to teach
the dogs. Some of us may not be old enough. Some of us are. If you remember, I don't think they do anymore, but the state of California was selling spay and neuter license plates. And the idea was you purchase a spay and neuter license plate, and then the state collects the funds, and then they appropriate it through a grant program. Well, it took them like 15 years.
Yes.
But the Critters Without Litters program is a direct result of the spay and neuter license plates.
Mm-hmm. That's good to know.
I thought the funding for that license plate just came about a couple years ago.
It was probably 4 or 5 years ago when they first started the grant process for that, because if you remember, Liz Keogh was here telling us.
Time does fly.
We actually did have a program that we got some of those funds as well, and we applied this time, but the Critters got it instead, which is fine. As a direct result of that license program, which is pretty cool.
Well, maybe if Vicki and Larry were to go public, because I don't believe that they're nonprofit.
Yeah.
Oh, they are nonprofit, okay. They could divulge how much money they make, but it wouldn't entice somebody else to open up another similar clinic, which is too bad, because they run a top-notch operation.
Yeah, they do.
And I'm proud to be a part of that and to use their services. I'm not afraid of it or anything. I show up at 6 o'clock in the morning with my 6 to 16 cats and make a difference.
Thank you for your comments.
Yeah.
Commissioner Taggart.
I don't have anything directly as far as reports, but I do, like I said, these are, I've been in the industry for 13 and a half years now. Just seeing how passionate everybody is here about these animals just says so much, you know. Again, and I sympathize when it comes to the not having resources. You know, people think we make big bucks in the job, but we really don't. I'm right now, you know, struggling just to get this guy through what I'm getting through. And, you know, like I said, you know, don't ever feel like any of them that you're taking care of or any of them that you're doing things for is not enough. You know, it is. It's, we do what we can. You know, I can't, I would love to, you know, take this guy in and get him radiation or whatever else he needed. I can't do that. We're doing chemotherapy. And, you know, it's, you do what you can, and every little bit you do makes such a big difference. And especially when it's, because that's where your heart's at, you know?
I want you to say that every month, because it's really, it's true. Something, go ahead.
I'm going to kind of add to that too. It's like, you know, for us as rescues, we're all kind of in different compartments, you know? One of the things that, it's funny because I got kind of mad at Maggie because nobody really shows up at the meetings, but somebody was like, oh, you're going to guilt me into it. And I thought, you know, she has no idea what guilt feels like. Guilt is, I want to quit rescue every single day. I need it. But you know why I don't? Is because of people like Nick and my friends who work at the shelters who have it even worse than we've got. So it's not that we're going, oh my God, you know, this is happening to just us. It's never been that. But what Michelle was saying, kind of picking back on that a little bit, was that we needed people to acknowledge how bad it really is out here in the streets, and that was our struggle. And now I feel like we're all kind of meeting in the middle, which is much better. And now we can move forward and actually make a difference. But it is hard because, like Nick was saying, there's like all these people who, they can't take their dogs with them. You know, there's always all these medical emergencies. I feel like I'm a vet 50% of the time. I have people sending me messages and pictures of their dog's butt that I'm like, I have no idea what that is. You've got to take a bit of that.
It's even worse when you're an RBT.
Oh, yeah. Once they get your number, it's all over. But, you know, it really is something that it's hard to do, but we are glad, you know, we're glad. I'm so, you know, thankful for the people that do support us. As, you know, having the girls on the team with me here, and every single day we get what we do as we can, that's what we can do.
Yeah.
Thank you. I also concur with what you said. I mean, the vibes in this room tell me that we're all in the same boat, right? And it used to be years ago, there was a big dissension going on, like one group against another group, or a lot of that nonsense. I don't feel that tonight. I haven't felt it in some time. You know, maybe we might have different ideas on how to get there, right? And that's kind of what we're doing. But we're all passionate about it. We all believe in it very strongly, and we want to get there. And we're in the same boat rowing. So I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. Okay, we're going to close out commissioner announcements and reports. Old business. Well, we're going to go down to the update on the AKC Reunite fundraising efforts. There was nothing new on that, right? What I don't know is the van. Well, it's a trailer, I guess. I don't know where it is. I mean, I guess it's been paid for. I don't know where it is. It's going to be stored at your facility when we get it, right, Nick? Isn't that where it is? All right. Moving on.
Point of space.
Item number two, status on ordinance subcommittee revisions.
Good news to report. Thank you, Commissioner Blackburn. Good news to report. We were able to get the subcommittee, the old gang, back on Friday at 1 p.m. That was the soonest time we were all able to get together. And we took a subcommittee vote on whether to bring the proposed revised ordinances to the commission so that the commission can take it into consideration. They all voted to do that unanimously. I did not see that one coming. But be that as it may, I should be here next month to present that text of those ordinances to the commission, and then it'll be in your hands, commission.
Good. We're short two commissioners tonight, so I'm glad we're going to wait and do that next month. But that's great news. So excellent. Anything else to add to that?
No.
Okay. Ian, do you have any comments on the subcommittee? Okay. I guess what's going to happen, we're going to present a test. We'll probably put together a subcommittee of our own to decide how, you know, what do we do? And to investigate it. Does it go to the board? Does it not? And so hopefully that won't take very long. Okay. New business, zero. And so what I need is a motion to.
Before you end.
Oh, I was going to mention once there's a discussion or an intention to discuss the subcommittee, we may want to get that on the agenda.
Yeah, please do.
Okay, so is that a referral from you guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would like to see that on the agenda for next month. Also, Gina, did you want a little more time next month to talk about what you're doing? Would you like to be on the agenda? Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Because I want to get you now while I've got you. Okay.
Council, okay, how so do you want me to put that on the agenda? Under new business? Like, are they going to vote on it? Is that what it's...
Well, it would be a... they would have to vote on it. And it would be under... Let's see here. Here, we can...
Oh, see. You want to talk about it. Okay, that's fine.
You don't
have
to vote on that, right? We can just ask to do it. Okay, good. That's kind of what I thought.
Okay.
Okay, real good. So at this point, our next meeting is Wednesday, June 15th. I need a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
And a second.
Second.
Okay, all in favor? Yes. Thank you.